This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. Today I want to welcome in all my guests on Fairways and Greens to a special show, bringing in two special individuals who have bonded together and actually written a book called Half Paralyzed, Twice Strong. Rich has been a guest on the show before, and we've got Fred with us today, and this is their story of how they met and were able to together journey to back to a great life. And Rich has gone from completely disabled to back to a scratch golfer. And when you hear Fred's story, I think it's going to touch your heart. And this book was written to share with other people. It's so well written. There were three people involved in it, and the way that it was written with the scripture involved in it, it's touched my heart, and I really hope it touches all you hearts, and I highly recommend this as a read. So today I want to welcome in Rich, how are you, and Fred Gutierrez. Rich O'Brien, Fred Gutierrez, welcome to the show again.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to speaking with you again and sharing our story, and so is Fred.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here to share. There's so many people now that I've reached out to that are so fascinated by your story. Fred, I mean, the fact that Michael Jackson passed through your life and that you were a mechanic on a submarine, a nuclear submarine at one point in life, and to be where you are today and to listen and to read this book, and I highly recommend that my listeners grab this book, download it on Amazon. Again, Half Paralyzed, Twice Strong, A Shot in Hope from the Deep Rough. And it's how two guys basically through Christ and through golf were became best of friends. And I'm so glad they're here to share their story. I'm just going to open it up to you guys. I mean, it's just, I'm just thrilled to have you on.
One of the things I want to thank the Lord for everything he's done in my life. By saying every step I take, every swing that I make is in his honor and his glory.
Agreed.
I wouldn't be here without his direction and his guidance, period.
Totally agreed. And if my listeners that grab the book and read, the journey that Fred went on is one of amazement to me. And I'm just so happy that he's here today to share his story with us.
I am truly blessed and honored in that respect, because as we were trying, before we got on the air, as I was trying to mention, 22 veterans commit suicide every day. And if I can get, through the Lord's help, if I can get just one, save one life through my experience and through my walk, if he could just follow in my footsteps, which I'm following in Jesus' footsteps, and if I can mirror him and they can mirror my steps, by just a simple game of following golf and get rid of their demons and their anxieties through a simple game of golf, which isn't that simple. We think it is. They'll just get up there and smack the ball. You know, for me, my pre-shot routine is look at the target, look at my, you know, how I'm going to swing it. Albeit I only do it with one hand, there's people do it with two hands and a good hip. I'm still paralyzed on a whole left side of my body. I still have to control that, which there's no control of that. Let's just throw that wherever that may go.
Yeah.
And I'll go over the. I'll give you a good example, which is funny because I have a good friend, the same as Sam Smargeese. he is after me so bad to beat me so bad. He shot a 90 today, and I shot an 84. But that is part of our journey together.
Yeah.
As veterans.
Well, Fred, I mean, I would hope, I mean, I'm going to ask you this because I would not bring it up unless you were comfortable with it, but, you know, you are paralyzed on the left side. And I think, you know, the story kind of begins with your issues with PTSD and the fact that you attempted suicide several times. And the reason I would like, if you were comfortable with it, if you'd share with the audience why you are paralyzed and kind of a little bit of that story. It's kind
sure.
of, thank you, Fred.
Okay, one of the reasons I'm paralyzed on my left side of my body is I'm similar to a stroke survivor and a heart attack survivor. It paralyzes your, it messes with your right hemisphere or the left hemisphere of your brain, and it causes that spasticity in your left or right side of your body, depending on what side of your brain gets attacked or misfunctioned. And in my case, the right hemisphere of my brain had a hole about the size of a golf ball, an inch and an eighth, completely missing. So other than any part of your body which can rejuvenate, repair itself, like if I break a finger, my finger's going to repair itself. The brain does not repair itself, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It can rewire itself and make yourself a little more, like I can walk now. But I was told when I was in the hospital, the first thing that my doctor told me, once I started my rehab, he walked into my room one day and goes, "Mr. Gutierrez," I looked and go, "Yeah, dog." I got some bad news for you. And he said, "You might as well get used to that wheelchair because you're going to be in the rest of your life." And I looked there and said, "I'm sorry, doc, but you are not God. You can't tell me that. I'm going to walk into your office one of these days and shake your hand. Might not be this week, it might not be next week, but I'm going to walk in your office and shake your hand." 2 months later, I walked into the office and shook his hand.
Yeah, and it's a miraculous story, Fred. And, you know, this is, and just for my audience's reference, Fred tried to commit suicide with a gun, and the Lord stepped in and veered the bullet off and spared his life. And he went through 6 days of coma and had a relationship with Jesus and was judged and given back his life. And it's just an amazing story. And it's all in the book. And I encourage you to read it. And you know, it's just amazing that how you overcame the things you did. And it was, you know, and you're right. I mean, your statement about you're not God, because you knew the truth was that only God can judge you. And with your belief in him, you were able to recover to the point today where you're playing golf and you're using this book and your whole story and your meeting with Rich as a testimonial to abilities to overcome major obstacles. And it's just a fascinating story. And so I'd kind of like to jump forward, because we only have an hour today, to when you guys met. And Rich, maybe a little bit of what you were going through when you met Rich and wandered down to the church.
Well, when I met Fred, I was 5 weeks removed from my own accident where I was ejected from a golf cart, broke my neck, broke my back, had 4 skull fractures, stroke, aneurysm. I was messed up pretty good, but I had a divine instance in the hospital myself, but I was told I would be okay. It would take a year, but I would be okay. And then in 3.5 years, I'd be made whole. So that was a very interesting thing from there. And when my neurosurgeon tested me a month after the accident, he said he had never seen anybody heal like that before. That got my attention. I hadn't been to church in years before that point, but I felt drawn. You know, Summerbrook Community Church is a half mile from my house. I had just built up to walking a half mile a day at that point, because I had to learn how to walk again after the accident. And it was like, okay, and I felt drawn to Summerbrook for some reason. There was three other churches within a quarter mile that I easily could have made. But I was drawn to Summerbrook, and as I walked there, I kept putting one foot in front of the others. I had a cervical collar on. My arm was in a sling. I was in level 9 pain the whole time. sweating profusely as I get there, and I walk up these seven steps of the old church that we had there. And at the top of the stairs, who do I meet? Fred Gutierrez is greeting everybody at the door with this big old bright smile, this smile that lights up the room or lights up everybody he sees. And, you know, in my state at that point there, I was encouraged by Fred. And he was the nicest man I could have met at that point there. And Fred became, you know, my inspiration that I could recover. Little did I know, and I'll throw it to Fred a little bit there. You know, I'll just leave you with, I looked like hell and I smelled like death. And Fred will tell you what he had to do in order to mask my smell.
He's right. He smelled really bad because he was oozing nothing but morphine. And that was part of my PTSD that he was setting off. He didn't know that. So what I had to do was I had to grab three coffee beans because I was off of the coffee dispenser. I would make coffee for everyone that came in. We would give everyone that came in for the first time before church, we would make them a cup of coffee, whatever cup of coffee they would like, plain black or whatever they want. And I would take three coffee beans and grind it in my hand and smell it and sniff it. Because one of my senses that was endowed with was a sense of smell. And I just couldn't stand the smell, be smelling it. He was like, wow, the smell of morphine was overpowering. So yeah. I was sitting out with PTSD, and he was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I can't.
And I couldn't smell anything at the time, so I didn't even know that I smelled that badly. And I smelled like death, literally, as he said. And my eyes were the blackest black eyes you'd ever seen. I had raccoon eyes, so I was messed up pretty good. And you know, the Summerbrook church family welcomed me, and that was a wonderful thing. And they became my adopted family because my family lived 1,000 miles away up in Syracuse, New York, and we're here in Charleston, South Carolina. So it was really quite interesting from that. And I had a long road of recovery ahead of me. My arm was in a sling for 11 and a half months, Gaylord, because, you know, I had three torn rotator cuffs. I had a torn labrum. My collarbone was decimated. You know, I had all that to work with, and they had to wait to operate on my shoulder because of my head injury. And then finally they operate on my shoulder, and it's the worst frozen shoulder you ever seen after 11 and a half months of being in a sling, right? So finally they have another surgery for me, and they tear out my they rip the scar tissue out with a right shoulder under manipulation. And lo and behold, right, you know, the angel, when he came to visit me, said, you will be okay. It'll take a year, but you'll be okay. Right?
Yeah.
On the one-year anniversary of my accident, guess what I did?
Played golf.
By the grace of God, I was able to finally start swinging a golf club a couple days before that. I called up our pastor, Pastor Brian Burton, and I said, Pastor Brian, let's go play 9 holes of golf. I want to see if I can do it, right? And I had looked at my mileage chart because I kept track of my mileage on a daily basis, right? And I set 2 goals on my deathbed. On my deathbed, I said I wanted to walk 1,000 miles and see where that would take me. And the second thing is I wanted to play golf again, and I didn't care how much pain I had to endure to do it, right? So on the one-year anniversary of my accident, I finished the 1,000th mile on my road to recovery on the 9th green at Somerville Country Club, where we're going to be on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And I played my first round of golf in a year playing with my pastor, and we finished at the exact moment of my death the year before.
Wow.
I don't think that was a coincidence.
No.
And then no. Pastor Brian said this wonderful prayer of thanksgiving, how far I had come. And that's just part of our story, and we get to describe all these wonderful events that took place on our road to recovery. You know, that my recovery was a graduate course, let's say, in learning, you know, about the human body, learning about compassion, learning about all these different injuries, illnesses, and challenges that we go through. And, you know, one of the things we talk about in the book is the Good Samaritan in the Bible. I think he was, you know, had special knowledge of what it was like to be kicked to the side of the road and beaten up pretty badly. And that's part of the reason why they were a Good Samaritan. And I think that's sort of, yeah, that Good Samaritan's kind of one of the things that applies to me as long as the prodigal son, too.
So. Right. Well, in Fred's story, just for my listeners, you know, he actually went through that in the Navy. Was literally taken by his whole group and punished for his inability to perform and the discussions about the mustard seed of faith, which is so prevalent through the Bible and how it's incorporated into the work is amazing. So here you are, you've played your 9 holes of golf, it's your year anniversary. So when did you and Fred start playing golf?
It was very interesting because, you know, I talk about the 3.5 years. You know, for me, you know, my long road to recovery, you know, finally in early 2012, my accident was September 25th, 2008. In 2012, you know, I'm finally starting to come up for air. You know, I've got some different things that are left, and I go to acupuncture, and all of a sudden a lot of my chronic pain starts to dissipate, my chronic fatigue, my chronic sleep disorder, my epilepsy. You know, I'm left with an addiction to pain medication and PTSD at that point. And you know, Fred asked me a great question in early 2012. It was, what was that question, Fred?
Can you help me learn to play golf?
Yeah. And I replied and I said, I'll help you any way I can. But at the time, I really wasn't capable of helping him yet because I was still addicted to pain meds. And it took another 4 or 5 months, really, after that point, until I started being able to help him. And when I realized that, you know, I had made a promise to Fred that I needed to keep. And it was about the time of the PGA Championship down here at Kiawah Island in 2012 that Rory McIlroy won. And I invited Fred to be my guest for an extra ticket I had to the PGA Championship. And so we went down and enjoyed that. And that day at Kiawah Island, I made the decision to invite Fred as my guest in the member guest tournament for Somerville Country Club. And I remember thinking that some things are more important than winning a golf tournament. And that really resonated with me on that one. And so, you know, we started playing golf together and doing some different things. It was early August, really, of 2012 that we started playing. And some amazing things started to happen because, you know, Fred at the time, you know, was shooting, you know, in the 120s, 130s, basically at that point is what I would guesstimate on there. Right, the first time we play together, you know, he's struggling to get around the golf course. You got exhausted on about the 8th hole, wasn't it, Fred?
Could walk, Mr. Gaynor, I could only walk 3 holes at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what. Do you remember Mae West in the TV shows?
Yes.
She would exaggerate by flipping her hip forward. That's how I would flip my hip forward and then drag my left leg.
Yes.
Like a wounded dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I walked.
Yeah.
Instead of walking forward like a normal person. I couldn't do that until later on.
And then at that same 9 holes, that front side, that first time we played together, it was really interesting. You know, Fred, yeah, well, he took a long time to play starting out. Let's just say that. I could see steam coming out from his ears at that point because it would take about a minute to hit every shot. He was working really hard. And I asked him after 9 holes, I said, Fred, how many, you know, tell me what you're thinking about when you're hitting this shot because it's taking about a minute for every shot. And he went through this list of thoughts, and there was about 37 thoughts that rattled off. And half of them, Gaylord, were counterproductive. They worked against each other.
Right.
And Fred, I guess you learned those from, like, the Golf Channel on there. But
the Golf Magazines? They were all mechanical thoughts, let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And then I said, Fred, if you want to get good at golf, you only can have one swing thought. And
right.
You immediately replied, what?
For the glory of God.
For the glory of God. And I love that. Immediately I knew exactly why Fred was playing golf. Every step he took and every swing he made was for the glory of God. And it just was like, wow, it brought everything into focus for me. And that was great. But then 30 seconds later, I heard this whisper in my ear, hands high for the glory of God. And that has been Fred's swing thought ever since then, right? And now, how profound was that? Well, let's just say the backside resulted in some changes for Fred, okay? Let's just say that his pre-shot routine, the amount of time it took him to hit every shot, went from a minute every shot down to about 10 and a half seconds.
Awesome.
That was amazing. We cut an hour of time playing golf for 9 holes. That was amazing, but that didn't even compare to the score he shot on the backside. He shot a 64 on the front side. On the backside, he shot a 48. This man improved by 32 strokes in one day. Gaylord, have you ever heard of anybody improving 32 strokes in one day?
From the glory of God, it's the only way it could have happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. No.
Exactly. So now Fred's down to under 100, right? And it was like, okay. And that was the amazing thing. And it was like these amazing things kept happening. We played the member guest, right? And then, you know, I also said something else to you, Fred, early on too. And I told you, if you want to get good in golf, you got to practice what for how long?
Your short game, 90% of the time, and putting.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I agree.
And that was like, okay, so then Fred would practice his short game for about an hour a day, and he did so for years from that standpoint as well. And quickly more strokes started coming off. Because, Fred, why don't you explain to everybody how you used to putt?
I used to putt like the traditional putting, and the anchor putter?
You had a long putter anchored to your chest at the time when it was legal, and you had the one hand you were putting with, or one arm you were kind of.
Right. And I would put it first on my chest, then under my arm, and then on my belly button, and then on my chest, then on my underarm, and then all the way up my arm. And I tried every different position you could imagine, except strapped to my leg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I tried to do that, I'd fall down. So I didn't try that. So finally, I got busted, and I shortened it to a regular traditional 34-inch putter, and then we both watched 7 Days in Utopia movie.
Yes.
By Dr. David Cook.
Yes.
And they do that face-on putting, and Rich came to me, goes, the big guy did a big click, the big aha moment, goes, Fred, why don't you try a face-on putting? I said, okay, I'll try it.
Right.
Took 2 weeks in Gaylord. 2 weeks of practicing face-on putting. I went from 9 3 putts a round to 1 3 putt every 9 rounds.
Wow.
Just that quick.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And you got to remember as well, with Fred's left hemiplegia being paralyzed on the left side, his left eye was, the muscles around it were paralyzed too, so he had no binocular vision in his left eye.
Wow.
So for him, putting the other way, any other way putting than face on, really didn't make sense because he couldn't see the hole.
Yeah, he blocked his blocked his view with his left eye because it being in front. Yeah, that's why righties with dominant left eyes are such great putters.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's amazing.
It's amazing from there, and all these things started coming together. And then, you know, Fred, tell him about Botox.
Oh yeah, when I finally woke up 3 o'clock in the morning, the Lord said, wake up, Fred, go turn on your TV. Mr. Gaylord, I had never found this TV channel ever since that one day. 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and it's like, go turn on the TV. It's like, why? Just go turn on the TV. So I turned on the TV, watched this TV show, this young lady is paralyzed from the waist down. She's getting Botox injections for the pain levels in her lower extremities. So I'm thinking, okay, so what, big deal, Botox injections. So she gets these Botox injections, and they put her back in her, and you can see them, the pain monitor is checking out her levels of pain. She went from pain level 10 down to pain level 5, and then they put her in a wheelchair, and they said from the wheelchair, she goes back in her bed. She goes from pain level 5 down to pain level 3, and you can see the relief in her face, and I was like, huh. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can see where that really helped her. Now, would that help me? So I'm thinking I'll look it up in the computer. I couldn't remember how to spell Botox, so I spelled Buttox. But luckily for me, the last word on the list came was Botox. I clicked on that and I read up on it. So I go back to the VA, and I refused to say to take no for an answer. So I told
them, good for you.
Either you reevaluate me no matter what, because I'm not going to take no for an answer, and I'm not leaving until I get reevaluated. Well, luckily for me, MUSC doctor Geraldo Rivalta was called in, and he reevaluated me. He goes, yeah, you're a good candidate for Botox injection. So come back in 2 weeks, and we'll give you the Botox injection. Well, that relieved the spasticity in my muscles. Spasticity is like all your muscles are bunched up into a big ball, and like a rubber band, you pull a rubber band tight, and you kind of release it. That releasing of the muscles takes the pain away.
Wow.
And that's what Botox is. Instead of getting Botox injections, like you get a big fat lips, I've already got big fat lips anyway, because I'm Hispanic.
But, yeah, the thing about that's amazing about the Botox, though, Fred, that we learned later on was the original usage of Botox was to relieve spasticity in stroke patients.
Yes.
And when it started getting into cosmetic surgery, everybody forgot that usage. And that problem really could be because only, what, about 5% of the people that should be getting Botox get them for the spasticity? So that's one of the big messages of our book, right, Fred?
Right.
Well, that and the acupuncture, which I believe in totally because I've done it many times. But that the story about Botox was fascinating to me because I'd never heard it. Used for pain, and I don't think the general public has ever heard that. And the fact that both of you guys have used it successfully to overcome traumatic pain, and it's just an amazing to that you're sharing that with the world, honestly.
Well, that's one of the things when I hear someone tells me that they are a stroke survivor, it's like, have you gotten your Botox injections yet? Well, why am I going to need that? Because you're going to get spasticity in your muscles, one side or the other, depending on what side of your brain got damaged by the stroke.
Right. About 30% of the people that have strokes or traumatic brain injuries develop spasticity, like Fred's talking about. And that's about almost 250,000 people a year right now. And that's a huge number. Think about over 10 years, that's 2.5 million people. They could have relief, but that nobody tells them that that's a possible thing for relief. And then, Fred, we also...
That's an alternative medicine, Gaylord. Truly, that's an alternative medicine that does not get talked about.
And we got one more, too, right, Fred? That scalp acupuncture. Let's talk about scalp acupuncture.
Right. Now, when I got my scalp acupuncture, Gaylord, when we're talking about scalp acupuncture, I couldn't lift up my hand and my leg on voluntary... notice, you lift your right, lift my right leg, that's lifted up. And my left leg, I have to think about it. It's like, when I send the signal to my left leg, it's like hitting a brick wall, literally. There was no, the signal would just go a certain distance and stop. And it was the first time Mary Margaret Dobson from Somerville, the acupuncture stuck the needles in my brain and the top of my head and up my left side of the right side of my scalp and told me to move my left leg. At first it didn't move, and then she readjusted the needles and she said, now move it. And it moved. She was surprised because it moved. And I had tears coming down my eyes. I had to turn my head because I didn't want anybody to see the tears coming down my eyes. I was so amazed. I was like, wow. And then she did the same thing with my arm. She wanted me to move my arm and my hand, and it moved. I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in the chair next to him, and I'm in tears too. My jaw is dropped, and it's like I'm like, we just watched him have his central nervous system be rebooted, and almost 17 years of paralysis has been countered a little bit. So for stroke patients, if they could get some of this really quickly between the stroke, the scalp acupuncture, and the Botox. You know, this is something that could help millions of people and improve their quality of life. And, you know, these were things in the book that had to be told. And that was one of the things that drove us to write the book.
You guys have been placed in his hands, and he is using you, as you know, to spread the word about not only Botox and acupuncture, but about PTSD. At this point, I hope that my listeners remember our stories, Rich, about all the different Facebook and social media sites you have, Christians on Course, your golf therapy Facebook site, and the fact that you and Fred are the basically face of disability rehab through golf. In the Carolinas, and now your story with the book is going to spread, the things that you're sharing with others that suffer from these same things. And I'm ADHD, and I've had I'm with you guys on this, and I've used acupuncture a variety of times in my life, and it did phenomenal things for me. And it's like, we just need to get the word out, and that's what you guys have been blessed to do. And Rich is obviously a very prolific writer. I see him up at 2 and 3 in the morning, posting things on his sites that inspiration. I prescribe to everything, so just type in Rich O'Brien on Facebook and just find out what he's up to. If you're a Christian, his motivational and inspirational postings are amazing. A lot of times you never know when you're just going to, something's going to hit you that makes a difference in your day. And I want to thank Rich for what he does. So now we've got you two guys and you're playing golf, and all of a sudden everything's kind of shifted over to you guys. And I guess the word would be champion disability and veterans therapy. And let's kind of go in that direction for a minute, because that's a whole nother thing that I really believe is special.
Yeah, that was wonderful. You know, we on March 5th, 2013, you know, Fred had a momentous day. You know, when we first started playing together, Fred had a couple goals. And Fred, why don't you tell them briefly about what your goals were on September 25th, 2012?
Well, that was interesting, because when I got my Botox injection, Dr. Bump asked me why I wanted the Botox injections. I said, one of the reasons is I want to be able to walk better. I want the pain to be relieved in my body. And I want to be able to play golf better. I want to be able to walk 36 holes and shoot in the 80s. And you have to remember, Gaylord, at the time I was shooting in the 120s. And I only had 4 months left. This was in September.
Uh-huh.
I only had 4 months left in the year to shoot in the 80s, in the low 80s. Uh-huh. And his jaw just dropped. He goes, it's kind of a high bar you're kind of setting there, isn't it? I said, yeah, but you got to set high standards for yourself if you want to reach those goals.
And my jaw dropped when he told me on September 25th, but we put together this plan and how to do it. So we figured out a way for him to be able to walk farther every round he played, because he had to build up stamina, right? And then he got the Botox injections, and he got more and more stamina every way. And before long, we were playing 27 holes every time we played, and I was getting tired. And he was pushing me beyond my limits at that point. There, you got to remember, I had injuries too, and my shoulder hurt. But, you know, you heard earlier about the 32 strokes he cut in one day and the 9 strokes he cut in the 2 weeks. You know, and he quickly got down into the low 90s. And had I known had I known in I guess it was what, near mid December 2012, that he wanted to, he felt frisky and he wanted to go for it, and we would have teed off a little earlier because we walked 33 holes that day and he shot 92 that day. And he was like 90 plus percent of the way to his goal. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that he was going to get there, right? But, you know, it would have been great for him personally as a benchmark to get that done, but it really wouldn't have had the impact that it's had. We needed to have time to put together an event. We called it the For the Glory of God Golf Marathon. And it tied in perfectly to his swing thought there. That was everything he was doing. You know, we needed a little bit of time to teach him sports psychology, work through Dr. Rotella and Dr. Cook there and the wonderful lessons that they have. We had to get him ready for the media because, you know, we were going to have TVs there. We were going to have newspaper people there as well. And we were going to have spectators. And I don't know about you guys, but one of the things that scares most amateur golfers is to have a crowd watching them and what that does to most players when they play. But, you know, that didn't have any impact whatsoever on them.
Yeah.
Because on the day of the event, you know, we got TV crews there. We got spectators walking around us. We were giving interviews left and right. And he goes out, right? The TV guy comes on the 12th hole, right? And he's rolling up. And he wants to film the rest of the round, and Fred gets in there, and what'd you do on that shot? Was as Mark Davenport came in, Fred?
I was 125 yards out, Mr. Gaylord. I took a 9-wood out. I've got to go over a water hazard, which is literally a pond on the 12th hole, which is number one artist hole on Myler Country Club, and I striped it, as we call it, which means I went over the water hazard. And I put it within 4 feet of the flag from 125 yards out.
Right. And Mark Davenport went, wait a second, I got to get this on film.
Yeah, a little late, Mark.
Exactly. But you know, Fred proceeded for the rest of the round to not miss hit a single shot.
That's awesome.
While he's being filmed the entire time. And the most amazing thing was he was making pars left and right. And, you know, I'm his opponent, I'm his caddy, I'm his PR agent, I'm doing everything here, right? And I'm watching this man play the best round of his life on the most important day, you know, from a standpoint with a platform to do what his message is about playing for the glory of God. And he plays his best round of golf by 4 full shots, and he shoots 85 because on the 18th hole, he's got a little, you know, like a 50, 60-yard wedge shot, and he hits the shot up in the air, and he hits the flag, and it stops about a foot from the hole for a kick-in birdie. Thank you very much. He shoots a net 67, right? I shoot like a 73 or 74, and I get my head handed to me.
Exactly.
But, oh, well, you know, anytime an instructor watches their student do so well and show every single lesson that you taught them and play the best of their ability, you can never complain at that point. That was one of the greatest displays of golf I'd seen. And for a man to be paralyzed on the left side of his body and play that quality of golf like that, that was just wow. Not amazing. And then, you know, he gives a TV interview to Mark Davenport for like a half an hour. And then we had another gentleman come up after that interview as well. And Fred, why don't you talk about Fred Gardenbush?
Yeah. Mr. Fred Gardenbush is a member for Myler Country Club. He had fallen out of the back of his truck and broke his neck, and he's paralyzed from the waist down, and he was in a wheelchair. He wanted to come and congratulate me on my going for the 36 holes and playing for the Glory of God Golf Marathon, and wanted to spur me on for the complete another, which was only 9 holes left. Well, actually, at that point, we only had 9 holes left. And he was, like, wanting to shake my hand. And so I talked to him and encouraged him about seeking acupuncture and getting Botox injections for himself. and then lifting him up with a prayer and stuff like that. It was awesome.
Yeah. You know, and these are the type of, you know, all the other things going on that most people never experience, you know, being interviewed in the middle of a round, having a chance to inspire somebody, having spectators. You know, it was absolutely amazing. And that day we also, you know, as we finished up, we wound up having like, you know, 20 people following us and 40 people around the ninth green, which is our last hole because we finished up by the clubhouse there. You know, I'm thinking as we finishing up this round, Dale, I got tears in my eyes just thinking about it and trying to figure out how to get everything set. And Fred's hitting his shots, and he's, you know, Fred's eating it up, and he's glorifying God with every step he took and every swing he made. And it was like, wow. And the last hole, you know, Fred, you had what? How far did you have in on the last shot to number 9?
130 yards out.
All right, describe that shot.
Once again, 130 yards out, took my 9-wood out again. Now I'm looking, I pictured my foster mom, my foster stepdad, my wife, and all my friends ringing around the whole ninth green. I could see their faces, I could see their smiles, I could see their eyes, I could see their looking it right at me. I'm just praying that I don't hit this shot.
Don't
stop
it.
Yeah.
I don't.
The pressure was on.
I hit one of them in the face or something. Just hit a good shot. So I picked my target on the green, and I hit one of the best shots that I've ever hit in my life.
Hands high right for God.
Maybe 15 feet from the flag to the right of the flag.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What a moment.
And you know, I had taught him sports psychology, and we went through all the Bob Rotella CDs, and, you know, we listened to them countless times. And Fred is like a sponge. You know, he remembers that stuff there, and it was wonderful on there, and he could apply it better than anybody I'd ever seen. You know, Gaylord, have you ever heard of an amateur golfer that was a 30-plus handicap using sports psychology to improve?
Not in my lifetime.
It just doesn't happen, yeah?
No.
So it's like, okay. So I can't think that's one of the lessons that the partially paralyzed golfer can teach all golfers and instructors, is that some things, like some of the sports psychology stuff, could apply a lot earlier for improvement than we think.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And that would be kind of really cool from a golf instructor perspective. But, you know, Fred's up there. He finishes up the round, you know, on that end, we're all done. You should have seen the smile on his face. It was a million watt smile, absolutely the most joy I'd ever seen. And I had thought, you know, coming up number 9, I figured out, you know, what the best way to glorify God and to do the final thought on there. So what I did is, as we finished, as we put the flag back in, I walked over to Fred. And I took my right arm, which had been in the sling and unusable and so frozen for almost a full year, and I picked up his left arm that was paralyzed and raised it up over our heads and pointed to heaven. That was hands high for the glory of God.
That's amazing.
And that's how we finished the ninth green of the golf marathon.
And that's the picture up the front of the book.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, back to the book just to a minute. The foreword in the book was written by, I believe it was written by Deal Hudson, who I kind of know a little bit about. And I'd like to just kind of paraphrase a little bit of it. I don't think we really haven't gone into Fred's story, but from early childhood, he had an abusive mother, father, had a, you know, child molestation issues, but very intelligent. Was bullied in school. He was small for his size, and ended up in the Navy. Conned his way in, would be my belief, because I know he was too young and too small, and made it all the way to an experienced diver and a submarine mechanic that worked on nuclear submarines, and saved his ship one time by being able to go into the bilge and make a repair that was necessary for them to surface again. I mean, these are amazing stories. But to share
the dark side of the story. And I like Hudson's words. He says, you know, too often Christian offers pull back from sharing the total darkness and unbearable suffering that leads persons towards self-destructive acts and even suicide itself. And it wasn't the first time Fred tried to commit suicide. The first time, Michael Jackson intervened. And the second time, God intervened, thank God, or he wouldn't be here today. But frankly, in this book, this is a place where many people are and have been, and they don't need a sugar-coated message. And this is not sugar-coated. This is the story. And I want to thank you guys for having the courage, particularly you, Fred, to relay your story in this book, because it was, I got goosebumps when I started reading it. And I reread your chapters several times. And the story that is told in this book of Rich and Fred is nothing like a sugar-coated message. Both literally breaking under the burden of misfortune and the deep mire of sin, they fight to recover their faith in life's fundamental purpose. And that recovery involves golf, the game that we all love so much. And it doesn't surprise me, because I've found golf to be an ongoing spiritual journey of my own, meaning that it involves all of me. Nothing's left out. Nothing is left unchallenged. And golf is a walk of life. And this book, I predict, will help in the transformation of many lives. And I believe that. And if you're listening to this show, you need to go get this book and read it, particularly if you're a golfer, because you're going to relate to the stories in here a little bit more, maybe a little more tuned in because you know the challenges this game presents. And the fact that these two gentlemen overcame death experiences, met through Christ, and went on to do what they've done today. There's also in the back of the book, there's a section on where you can find help, which is awesome. There's some amazing pictures in here. And I like, you know, I keep going back to Fred's thing, you know, his which he says often, and it's quoted in the book multiple times. I think it's the last page in the book, and that the farthest you're ever away from a relationship with God is the distance between your knees and the floor. And I think this book is such an inspirational book, so now that we want them to read the book, we want them to read the stories, we want to touch people that are reaching out, that are struggling with the conditions that we face, PTSD, mental, drug addiction, abuse, child abuse, just everything, veterans that we know, as Fred mentioned, that 22 a day are committing suicide. And so now, through this whole process, where are we today, guys? What are you guys up to right now?
Well, you know, one of the things that Fred had said after the golf marathon, the next step is he wanted to inspire veterans and others with injuries to overcome them. So that's really kind of where a lot of the stuff we've gone on to do with golf therapy started there, with the idea when Al Thays of Golf Channel did our story, and then the PGA of America got a hold of it, and they asked us to champion the PGA HOPE program, Helping Our Patriots Everywhere program here in Charleston. And we've done that, and now there's about 75 veterans in our program right now that are part of that program. And this Sunday at our book launch, we're having a graduation ceremony for all of these guys as well, so we're incorporating them in. We've got all of our adaptive golf groups that are coming in from Augusta and Savannah, as well as Beaufort and Myrtle Beach, that have started as well. So it's really quite amazing from there. And then Fred also wanted to play in the National One-Arm Golfers Association event too, and we've connected with that, and you played in that event last summer, correct, Fred?
Right. One of the things that I do to continue that the process, Scalard, is after they have the sessions with, you know, on the driving range, they learn how to play golf, I get them together twice a week, either Tuesday or Thursday, and take them out on a golf course and continue the lessons there.
Mm-hmm. They mentor them out there as well, and keep them all active every day of the week, because PGA HOPE is only really 12 weeks out of the year.
Right.
So for the other 40 weeks, you know, Fred has taken charge of that, and that's been a wonderful thing.
Fred, thank you
and
so much.
And the camaraderie ship and the fellowship continue there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah. I believe that golf is a lot about relationships in life. And I think, you know, Dale Hudson mentioned that, too. It's just a journey that to me now, it's the relationships that I've met through the game and the friends that I play with. And as we get older, we begin to really appreciate the relationships that we have on the golf course. And, you know, I'm a big believer in as Michael Hepburn has preached for years, that you play to learn the game. And if we can get them out on the golf course, we can make a change. And we can get them into the game, and it becomes a game of life. It's such an inspiring story. So now you've got this book thing coming up Sunday, and you've got the graduation for the local group, and
right.
I can't wait to see the pictures, and I know Rich is going to post it up on Facebook. So what about the long drive thing? I know there's the disabled long drive. You're kind of involved in that, Rich. I know you've written for the Long Drive magazine.
Yeah, I'm the editor of the Long Drive Golf magazine as well, and I actually, you know, came to it from Paralong Drive, covering some of that with Gene Jarvis, on that, and we covered some of that. Going in conjunction with our golf therapy stuff, but you know, my storytelling ability was attractive also to the publisher, so I started doing the editing for that as well, and interviewing some of the top long drivers and working that way. But one of the beautiful things that's happened through the course of what we're doing, part of our goal when we started the Golf Therapy Facebook page was to get golf in the Paralympics, was to get, you know, more PGA professionals wanting to teach adaptive golf and to get a centralized clearinghouse, really, of all of the adaptive golf associations. These were the goals that we originally set when we started that Facebook Golf Therapy page about 16 months ago, I guess it was. So it was very interesting to see. Now it's up to like 6,400 people. But what we have is, through my continuous writing about some of these different things and others as well, you know, the USGA just announced the last couple weeks that they're looking to host a U.S. Open for individuals with disabilities. That will be huge. That's going to be your first step, really, towards getting golf in the Paralympics. And then, you know, there's going to be here in the Lowcountry, the Paralong Drive Cup, which is the event that Dean Jarvis hosts, the championship or the world championship for adaptive golf. And hopefully we'll have over 100 participants participating in that event at the end of August, because our chapters here in the Lowcountry are going to go en masse up there to participate and go. So if we bring 70 or 80 of our own and there's 30 to 50 others participating, we'll have over 125. And I think that'll be a great message to the USGA and the Paralympics, that golf is ready for the Paralympics. There's some questions that need to be answered for getting it in the Paralympics, but I think we're getting close to that right now. And I'm also extremely proud that a lot of the PGA professionals have seen stuff on our page and become interested in PGA Hope. And in working with the veterans, and your friend Mark Croft is a big one
Yes. From
that standpoint as well, along with Kathy Jensen out in Yuma.
Yes.
We've got many, many others that have seen golf therapy and wanted to do it, and the program just keeps expanding and more people get help. And I put golf therapy in these terms, and it really came from Fred and some of the other veterans at PGA Hope Charleston here when I interviewed them. You know, With our program, we trade nightmares and flashbacks for golf dreams and new friendships. And Fred, why don't you explain that to everybody in your words?
Basically, when you have all of these demons and all of these junk in your head, and you're still trying to sleep. But when you get acupuncture, it kind of enhances, it kind of brings those back up again. But that's part of the treatment. That's part of therapy. But as soon as you start thinking about that, you start saying, I can replace that with a chip shot to the 3 feet from the flag and a putt for a par. I'm making this par while I'm doing this. So you start seeing the first hole, how you can conquer that, the hardest hole on the golf course, or the best shot you just made today. Okay, like Fred Couples' favorite shot. She's the best shot you can do with a 6-iron. That's what he does. That's what he told Bob Patel. It's like, I can approach the 6-iron shot. What's the best 6-iron shot I ever had made with a 6-iron shot? So that's how he approaches the 6-iron shot. We do the same thing with the veterans. How do you approach, instead of hitting a golf shot, instead of hitting a golf ball, see how you can hit your target rather than the ball. Because you're going to hit the ball, regardless of whether you hit it 3 feet or 6 feet, but if you hit it 100 yards, you're going to hit it 100 yards at the target rather than hitting the ball. You're going to hit the ball no matter what. Don't focus on hitting the ball, focus on hitting your target.
Right, and Fred, from a standpoint of, you know, the process of learning a new skill, like golf, and working that where you focus all your attention on that as opposed to getting in your own head. And then the side benefit as well is now a lot of these veterans in our program, right, who had never reintegrated into society, right, from Vietnam in 45 to 50 years, now they have friends again, which they didn't have. And that's the one most wonderful thing I think I've experienced with PGA
right.
Boston.
We have friends and we're getting out of our own way. That's the best thing. The guys are getting out of our own way. We're not setting ourselves up for failure. And if we do, we just call each other up and say, oh, hey, I'm having this issue. What do I do? Mm-hmm. Get out of your own way. Call me, get out of your own way, and let's talk.
And the thing that's beautiful is that now they have somebody that understands PTSD, where before no one they ever met understood PTSD as well, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think it's been a long journey of understanding. I think ADHD was misunderstood. I don't think people realize that our first response people and people that have had traumatic childhoods that have seen traumatic things in their life can carry this on with them, and it may not show up initially. It may not be diagnosed. I mean, how long did it take for them to diagnose Fred's bipolar situation? I mean, even in the military, I mean, he stabs himself with a butcher knife, and they misdiagnose him then. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. I mean, and so I think as time goes on, the efforts that you guys are making. Are making a difference, and as long as we keep it out there, and as long as people, I hope that if you're out there listening to this show and you know someone or you are someone that suffers from these things, I know that they're mainly located in the South Carolina area, but there's other places, even here in Vegas, where we started. Right. We're beginning to start to do things with the Veterans Hospital out at one of the golf courses here in town on Tuesdays and Saturdays, and it's a start, but it gives people. The whole story that Fred told about the friendships and it's an amazing thing when you're lonely and you're suffering from these conditions to find someone who can relate to you and give you hope and strength. And I think this book is based on that. I mean, you know, half paralyzed, twice strong. And these two individuals came together through the work of the Lord would be the best way to describe it. And they've gone on to take them because they were both given their life back. And God asked them, basically would be my guess, is that, okay, now that you have your life back, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to go back to where you were? Or are you going to go out and make a difference? And both of these two gentlemen have gone on to make a huge difference in hundreds and thousands of lives. And Rich was talking to me, sent me a text earlier, said he's about to reach 11,000 viewers. Which is touching a lot of people because those 11,000 are touching another 10, you know, another 100 and another 100, and it's making a difference. And I want to thank both of you guys for writing this book and making a difference in so many people's lives. And it's been an honor to have you on the show. I know we're going to remain friends. I look forward to Rich's posts every day. I would encourage you to track him down on Facebook, particularly if you know someone or you are someone, again, that suffers from these things. And because there, it's all there, links to where you can get help or in the back of the book. Mm-hmm. The story is incredible. When you actually read both of their stories, and the fact that they're sitting here today talking to me on this radio show is going to amaze you. And unfortunately, guys, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much. Anytime you want to come on and show and talk, I'm here, and we can do this anytime you want. I think it makes a difference, and that's what we're here to do, is to give back and mentor other people.
That's right. We have to be sowers of seeds.
Yes.
We have to plant those seeds and watch where it grows.
Yeah, and let that, you know, the faith the size of a mustard seed can make a huge difference. I mean, you can move mountains, and, you know, and I want to thank you guys again. Rich, thanks. Fred, thanks.
Thank you. And Gaylord, one last thing on there. Anybody that really wants to connect with us on a different level as well, the Christians on Course group on Facebook is open for that. And we just started that up, and that's what that's all about.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Have a great
day. Bye-bye.
Be blessed.
God bless. Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.